TalkZone.com!
Alright, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
The name's Adam Weber, and I see that you buy baseball cards.
How much you want for this Mickey Mantle rookie season?
I was hoping to sell all of the cards.
TalkZone presents the Fan Cave Radio Show with your host, Tom Morgan.
This guy's unbelievable.
Featuring Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune and Dave Hoekstra of the Chicago Sun-Times. Sponsored by SouthsideCards.com.
Wait, I'll make you a deal. I will give you a Rogers Hornsby if you take me to the hotel.
The show that can change your life.
Rogers Hornsby?
Just let your wife find out you're listening to a sports and memorabilia show on the internet.
Rogers Hornsby's worth like $4,000.
So I got two of them, and this many Larry Yogi Berras.
Sit back, relax, and learn a thing or two. It's the Fan Cave Radio Show on TalkZone.com.
Let's go to work.
Welcome to the Fan Cave Radio Show. I'm Tom Morgan with Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune, Dave Hoekstra of the Chicago Sun-Times, and our producer is Dave Olson. And now it looks like Chris Bosch and Dwayne Wade are going to the Heat. Jake Peavy's on the DL. So we're going to step off the ledge for a second and start our show with a guest. We have the Sultan of Spice with us today, Mr. Barry Levinson, the founder and curator of the Mustard Museum. Barry, welcome to the show.
It's an honor to be here, guys.
TheMustardMuseum.com. Now, how'd you come up with the Mustard Museum? Can you fill us in on how you got started?
It started in 1986. I was lawyering here in Wisconsin for the State Justice Department, but having grown up in New England, diehard Red Sox fan, I really thought that they were going to do it in 86. You know, they had Roger Clemens, Bruce Hurst, Bill Buckner, yes. And, of course, I was all ready to celebrate in Game 6, and then they lost it. They then lost Game 7. I was so depressed. I couldn't sleep. I went to an all-night grocery. I was crying. I said, I need a hobby. And I walked past the Mustards, and I heard a voice that called, if you collect us, they will come. And that's why I started collecting jars of mustard. And now, I gave up my law job a few years later. And we now have the world's largest collection of mustards, over 5,200, hundreds of items of mustard memorabilia. We're in Middleton, Wisconsin, which is near Madison. Used to be in Mount Horeb, but don't go to Mount Horeb looking for us. You won't find us. And we do mustard like nobody else does mustard.
Now, when I quit my advertising job and decided to open a card shop in the late 80s, a lot of people I knew kind of looked at me a little bit cross-eyed, like I was out of my mind. Okay, you were a lawyer, and you decided to open a mustard museum. What type of response?
Oh, yeah, it was like, are you crazy? And I said, yeah, but, you know, all right, I was working for the state. So what? So I had a good salary. So I had fringe benefits. So I had paid vacation. So I had health insurance. You know, who needs those things, right? Who needs them?
You didn't have a museum full of mustard.
That's right. I got mustard now, so everything else is irrelevant.
Dave, have you been there?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to Mount Horeb a couple of times. I was just going to ask Barry, why did you move? I was kind of surprised. I just heard it over the grapevine that you'd move. Why did you relocate?
Well, the building we were in was kind of falling down on us. There were no options of staying there. And frankly, there was this space in Middleton, which is a great, great town. It's one of the best places to live. A lot of stuff going on here near Madison. And the city was very supportive of us coming here. The place is gorgeous. I mean, Dave, what you saw was nothing compared to what we have now. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's just a knockout. Just about 15 minutes ago, the chefs from Grey Poupon have walked in, and they were floored when they saw this. And they're upstairs tasting mustards now.
How'd you move all that mustard?
Well, moving that mustard was a real chore, and we moved it in November, but we left one jar behind. And we moved that last jar for our grand opening on April 9th. And what we did was have the cross-country teams from the Mount Horeb High School and the Middleton High School run the jar in a relay, 17.8 miles, all saying, please pass the mustard. It was the world's longest mustard pass.
Well, that's awesome. What kind of mustard was it?
It was Grey Poupon.
Mm.
I mean, Grey Poupon's a great sponsor of one of our supporters. And, you know, we have several good friends in the industry, but Grey Poupon has been really stepping up for us to, you know, to get the word out and to help us. So we're really grateful. And let's face it, the history of mustard is kind of nothing without Grey Poupon in this country.
You need to know the history of mustard to get that Poupon U degree, right?
That's right, because we are the Mustard College, Poupon U. In fact, the we just had tryouts for the Poupon U marching band. I don't know if you can hear them singing in the background. Oh, yeah, I hear it. Here we go. On our hot dogs, on our bratwurst, mustard is so cool. Never mayo, never ketchup, they're against the rules. Gleaming gold and mellow yellow, smooth, rough, sweet, and hot. Fight, poop on you, we'll fight and eat some lunch.
Okay. Now we know things are going to be looking up after that. We know that all of a sudden I just have a feeling the Bulls will be signing something. The White Sox will be better off because Peavy's hurt. That changes our whole outlook on everything.
Yeah, you know, when the Red Sox lost, I swore that, okay, I'm going to keep doing this until the Red Sox finally win a World Series.
Hey,
and then, of course, yeah,
I was telling my pals here, I didn't know until one of my more recent visits. Tell us about the books you've written, like The Seventh Game, and your background as a baseball writer.
Yeah, I wrote a book. I was fascinated by. I'm a real baseball nut. I love everything baseball, but having been convinced of the greatness of mustard by the seventh game of the 86 World Series, I said, you know, other seventh games have got to have their own magic. So I researched them and wrote a book called The Seventh Game. It's the story of the 35 World Series seventh games, beginning in 1909. The last one was 2002. Forward is by Ralph Terry, who gave up the home run to Bill Mazeroski, but also then pitched a shutout 2 years later in 62 for the last Yankee victory in a seventh World Series seventh game, and it's the lore and legend of those games. It came out at the very beginning of the 2004 season, and I dedicated the book to my father, who's now 93, who was not in good health then. You know, we didn't know if he was going to make it through the year. And I dedicated it to him, and the last line of the dedication reads, "Hang in, Dad. This will be the year." And it was.
Wow.
So it was, the book is published by McGraw-Hill, out of print, but, because I bought all the copies because I wanted to control distribution, I bought all the rights back. So if anyone wants to get a copy, go to mustardmuseum.com and search for The Seventh Game. And,
now what's your favorite seven game series? Do you have a number one seven game series you think was the best ever?
Yeah, I do, and I know a lot of people say, oh, come on, but I really think the 1924 12-inning affair that the Washington Senators won over the Pirates, the only time the Senators won a seventh game, making a hero of Walter Johnson, a bad hop single in the 12th inning, I just thought that for what it did to baseball was the greatest seventh game ever. Walter Johnson, pitching in relief, was in trouble all the time, but he held off the Pirates, and they finally won. Number two is the 2001 seventh game. That was the come-from-behind win from the Arizona Diamondbacks. You know, baseball took on a special meaning for the country, and, you know, so improbable to beat Mariano Rivera. Tough, because I think number three is the 1991 seventh game. Jack Morris, 1-0, 10 innings. Brilliant game. Absolutely brilliantly played. So, I mean, there have been such great, great seventh games. White Sox have never been in a World Series seventh game.
I don't think I could survive it if they did.
The Cubs were in one, 1945. They out-hit the Tigers, but still managed to lose 9-3. How do you out-hit a team and lose by 6 runs?
Who was their hitting coach? Fire the hitting coach.
Fire the hitting. Let's talk about lack of timely hitting. They had their hits. But
Gerald Perry.
I
wonder if that time they left 17 guys on base like they did last week.
It was pretty rough. I mean, that was.
Hey, Barry, who's the only player whose last name begins with Q to appear in a seventh game?
Oh,
Frank Willis.
You guys stumped me on that.
Yeah, well, there's a trivia contest, a 50-question trivia in the book. Who's the only player to end a World Series, seventh game, World Series of any type, by being thrown out trying to steal a base.
Mm. Babe Ruth?
Yes. 1926.
Right.
The only time the Babe was in the a seventh game, because the Yankees never needed seven games, and except for 1926 when the Cardinals beat them. Cardinals have won more seventh games than even the Yankees, than any team. They're 7-3. So there's a lot of great history and lore in terms of World Series seventh games. So it was a great delight. Peter Clark, who was then the curator of the of collections in Cooperstown, just welcomed me there to look through all the old archives. So there's a lot.
Phil Rogers from the Chicago Tribune is trying to get a question in here. Barry, what's up, yeah. Phil?
Yeah, Barry, I was wondering if Ruth was the tying run when he got himself thrown out.
Yes, he was. Yeah, because the final score was 3-2. Two outs, he drew a full count walk off of Pete Alexander and took off. He was out by 10 feet. So, and on up at the plate, Bob Musil, on deck, Lou Gehrig. And the Babe was trying to surprise everybody.
Wonder how many
hot dogs. How many hot dogs did Ruth have before the game?
Well, and what was his favorite mustard?
Yeah,
he probably had, well, he had a lot of mustard. He put mustard on it, and you know, the legend is that Pete Alexander came in totally hungover when he struck out Tony Lazzari in the seventh inning. You know, that was just legend. So it was the World Series seventh game. So let's face it, there's nothing like a World Series seventh game to get you going, and there's nothing like a hot dog with mustard on it when you go to a baseball game. You have to.
Hey, Barry, this is Phil Rogers again.
Hey, Phil.
I'm just wondering, speaking of the hot dog with mustard, how did that become the way to eat them in the Midwest?
Well, we know that, I mean, that really goes back about 100 years. The immigrants, European immigrants, are always just putting mustard on it. And I know that in Chicago, if you put ketchup on a hot dog, I mean, is that a crime in the city of Chicago?
I mean, I've been ticketed for it a couple times.
You know, it's just, you don't do things like that. You just don't do it. And so it's, you know, just mustard on a hot dog. I go to a game, whenever I go to a game, the first thing to do, get a hot dog, put a perfect squiggle of yellow mustard on it, hold it up to the blue sky, take a look at the green grass, you know, and I know that everything is right with the world.
When did they start making all the different types of mustard? It seemed like when I was a kid, there was like one thing in a yellow container. When did it start going all the different flavors and everything?
That was probably in the 70s. They started a few, and then it really exploded in the 90s. In the late 80s and the 90s, they started. And now there are so many different things that you can get in mustard. You can get blue cheese-flavored mustard, chocolate-flavored mustard, root beer-flavored mustard, any herb, any fruit, cranberries, raspberries. Although they were doing that in France 200 years ago. They were putting all kinds of funky stuff in mustard. But that kind of died down for a while. But the origins go back to Dijon, France, where, of course, everyone knows is famous for mustard.
Do you still carry the Burtman ballpark mustard
of
from
course.
Cleveland?
Yeah, the most famous ballpark mustard is called Burtman's, and it's the mustard served at the Jake. Well, I guess they call it Progressive Field now, whatever, but, you know, Cleveland fans still call it the Jake. And even when the when the Indians are lousy, people go there just for the mustard. It is legend. When you go to the ballpark there, in fact, the woman who owns it, the woman is now in a nursing home, and she called me several years ago. She said, the Indians are having a corporate workout day. They want all the purveyors and sponsors to show up and get out in the field. Said, I need a walker. I can't do that. You want to pinch hit for me? So I flew out to Cleveland. They gave me a uniform. It was 2003. And I got to take batting practice, shag fly balls, take grounders, have a pickup game. At Jacobs Field, it was you know, dream come true. The fans, well, they're in my mind. That's all. But it was so great.
I noticed on mustardmuseum.com you were offering a gift box with all the 2010 gold medal mustard winners in a package. Apparently, now, how do you come up with gold medal for mustard?
There is an international competition every year, every January. That is held in conjunction with a festival in California I coordinate the judging, supervise the judging. Mustards from all over the world, over 350 mustards, are entered in different categories, and these are gold medal winners. So it's really special. Dijon mustards, fruit mustards. There are, I think, 15 different categories of mustard.
How much is that gift pack?
It's about $45 or so for like eight mustards, and it's really pretty special. That's one that we're real proud of. People, it's funny, we always send some to a company in Japan that wants to try and copy them every year. You know, they always want the gold medal ones to see if they can clone them.
So if somebody goes to mustardmuseum.com, they can order it directly through there, that type of thing?
Yeah, they can order directly through us. Hundreds of mustards, books. My children's book, Mustard on a Pickle, because it's really important to get children at a young age to fall in love with mustard. You know, by the way, that ketchup is now the leading cause of childhood stupidity in America. Did you know that?
Maybe that's my problem.
Oh, so it's for little kids. It's about a little boy who loves mustard on everything.
So, did you ever make your mustard meringue pie? Last time I saw you, you said you were working on that.
Yeah, working on that. Actually, we're working. You guys familiar with the Culver's chain? Culver's Frozen Custard?
Yeah, sure.
They are going to be providing mustard custard for us for National Mustard Day, which is Saturday, August 7th. So everyone down there, come on up. This is a great event. Family-friendly. We've got live music. Mustard games like mustard ring toss and mustard custard. We just tasted what Culver's developed, and it is amazing.
Where is this going to be?
Free hot dogs. Free hot dogs if you put mustard on them.
Where is this?
It's at the National Mustard Museum in Middleton, Wisconsin, or the west end of Madison. And it's going to be a great event. This every year it is. We had about 5,000 people in Little Mount Horeb. Streets will be closed. It is one of the best food festivals you ever want to go to.
So do the hotels give a discount if you bring in a jar of mustard?
You know, we're working with them. You call them and say, I'm coming, because we've been working with the hotels. You call any of the hotels in Middleton. You say, I'm coming for Mustard Day. There's also a bike race that weekend, the Centurion Bike Race. There's a lot of stuff going on here. So it's a great time to come up and visit, as well as just to come see the museum.
Any phone number you want to give out?
Yeah, how about our toll-free number, 1-800-GET-MUSTARD, which is 1-800-438-6878, and our website, mustardmuseum.com. And I'm always around to talk mustard or baseball, because it's funny, you talk about baseball cards. I was a collector as a kid. I have a collection now, but in order to be in this collection, you have to have played in a World Series seventh game. So, unfortunately, I don't have Ernie Banks in that book.
Yeah, I know.
That's a neat collection, though.
He never got it. There are about 700 players that have been in the seventh game of the World Series. I mean, that's quite an honor just to be in it. You know, and A to Z, including Frank Quillacy, who, by the way, did get a hit off Sandy Koufax in the 65 seventh game that Koufax won 2-0.
Well, I like Dave's name for you, the Sultan of Spice. We'd like to thank Barry Levinson from mustardmuseum.com. And one more time, Barry, the phone number for the Mustard Museum, and when is that event coming up, August 7th?
The phone number is 1-800-GET-MUST or 1-800-438-6878. National Mustard Day, Saturday, August 7th. We'll roll out the yellow carpet for you.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on with us.
Thanks, guys.
Before we go to the break, I want to do a quick plug here for a guy named Bill Yergler. If you are a retailer that takes charge cards right now, check out what you're getting charged by the companies that handle the transactions, because I noticed mine at Triple Crown went way up, and Bill Yergler from G.S. Cooper & Associates looked it over and is going to save me a lot of money. So if you want to find out about him, I've got his card here for you if you run a retail spot. And then we'll go right into the break. And after the break, we'll come back with the afternoon fill. So hang in there, everybody.
Can you hear that? Listen carefully. It's the sound of your old, inefficient appliances throwing your money out the window. It's a good thing you can get up to a $500 prepaid rebate card by mail with the purchase of select Energy Star qualified Maytag brand appliances at Dependable Maytag. Save on dishwashers, refrigerators, and laundry pairs. Get rid of your costly old appliances and lower your monthly bills. Visit Dependable Maytag in Naperville today or visit our website at DependableMaytagStore.com. Visit store for full details and qualified models.
Southside Cards and Collectibles is your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. No matter what your hobby, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, NASCAR, gaming, or more, Southside Cards carries all the new packs and boxes from Upper Deck, Topps, Panini, and Press Pass. You'll also find memorabilia and supplies. Come in today and see for yourself. Southside Cards is open every day but Monday. They're located at 11325 West 143rd Street, Orland Park, Illinois. Call 708-873-5088 or visit them online at southsidecards.com. Southside Cards and Collectibles, your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. Call 708-873-5088 or online at southsidecards.com.
Castle Home Inspection is an Illinois-licensed company offering home inspections, radon and mold testing. Trust your home to the friendly experts at Castle Home Inspection, in business for 16 years. Call 630-462-1050. That's 630-462-1050.
The talk of planet Earth. This is TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio. You're listening to the Fan Cave Radio Show on TalkZone.com, brought to you by SouthsideCards.com.
Well, with Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune. What's up, Phil?
Hey, not much, Tom. We got us some Texas weather today. Makes me think about growing up in Texas, watching those Texas Ranger designated All-Stars.
Okay.
I'll take off here with the morning, Phil, a little version of what you can read in the Chicago Tribune. This will be the afternoon, Phil. You can get your morning, Phil, on ChicagoBreakingSports.com. Just thinking about all-star selections, I've always been a guy that was an advocate for every team having a representative in the game. But lo and behold, as I've aged here, I have changed. And when the teams came out this week and I got to see the Pittsburgh Pirates' Evan Meek on the team, I realized before then that the nature of the game had changed and it was time to get rid of the antiquated rule where every team had a representative. When I was a kid in Texas, I did enjoy watching Jim Sundberg and maybe Buddy Bell in a good year go to the All-Star game because every team had to have an All-Star. A lot of years, my little Texas Rangers wouldn't have had any. Yet, now I think fans, because of fantasy baseball, because of the baseball package on cable, Baseball Tonight, fans really watch the game across the board and are much more fans of all 30 teams than they are of just one team. I think they're fans of the best players in the game, and I think we ought to have the best players in the game. When the National League puts together an all-star team and finds a way not to have Joey Votto on it, I think something's wrong. Also, none of the San Diego Padres pitchers. The Padres are one of the best baseball teams in either league, and they're that way because of the pitching staff. Yet, not a single Padres pitcher on the team. Matt Latos, a rookie, one of about a dozen pitchers this year with at least six wins and an ERA below three. They got left out of the All-Star game. So I would just like to see the rule go away so in the future we'd have a better chance of getting the absolute best players there, although there's probably still no way to legislate against the craziness that got Atlanta Braves utility man Omar Infante on the National League team. I still haven't quite figured that out. I know Charlie Manuel got hit with a lot of pitches as a hitter. Maybe a few of them were left him with concussions.
I think that's it. I agree with you 100%. I'm with you. Usually we're on opposite ends, but I'm with you 100% on that one. Get the best guys.
How's Paulie doing in the voting?
He's moving up, but I think he's third now. If Nick Swisher wins that, I swear I don't even want to watch the game. Of those five guys that are on that thing, he deserves it the least of the five. If he better not win that.
Well, he is campaigning like crazy. I mean, he's campaigning. Reminds me of the Punch AJ campaign the White Sox put together for Pierzynski. They got him elected, you know, and then, you know, you ask Paul Konerko what he thinks about it, and it's like, well, if I go, great, if I don't go, great, clearly not wanting to campaign for himself, kind of feeling like you ought to get, you know, here's a novel idea, feeling you ought to get to the All-Star game on your own merits, not your image or PR or campaign.
Absolutely.
Aren't the Sox doing that, though? I read before I left town they're doing like a Pollywood button or something like
that. Oh, they campaign as much as anybody.
Yeah.
It's just not working as well. But I could see Pauly losing out to Michael Young or to the Red Sox guy. I'm drawing a blank. Euculus, but not the Swisher. That would tick me off.
Well, Konerko, too, is in as hard of a spot as any player to be picked for an All-Star team as an American League first baseman. You got, but with the fan vote and the player vote, there's no way you're going to be Justin Morneau and Miguel Cabrera.
Not this year.
Those two elect spots are off the board before you even start. And then now you have two designated hitters that get elected as, you know, by the fans and also the managers. And a lot of times those are going to be first base types. So to be the third best first baseman in the American League is a real uphill fight to get to the All-Star game.
He's really having an All-Star type year, too. He's had a lot of big hits for the White Sox this year, more really than I ever remember him having in the past. He's really having a good year. And Rios really seemed to get no consideration at all for what a great all-around year he's having. They had the two guys from Toronto make it. It seems like a lot of times managers don't want to tick players off in their own division or on their own team or whatever, and they don't get the guys that way. It's just so much politics in it.
Well, you know, I was surprised the American League players elected Jose Bautista with Toronto. He's not a big-name guy, but he's led the American League, like Konerko, most of the year in home runs, got off to that really fast start. I have a hard time arguing for him, but, you know, compare Alex Rios to Marlon Byrd. Look at their numbers, and, you know, I think even a Cub fan like Dave is going to have to come down that Rios' statistics make him a much better case for him to be there. I don't know if the American League outfield is that much tougher than the National League, but there were, you know, not just Marlon Byrd. Matt Holliday with the Cardinals has had a bad first half by most people's standards, yet the National League players elected him to go there as a reserve. So sometimes even the players kind of make goofy picks.
Very strange. Well, we've got some breaking news, we believe, that this is good for Bulls fans. Our producer Dave Olson put this up, a link to a story from Casey Johnson, and I looked on Twitter, and Chad Ford has the same thing up, that it looks like the Bulls have reached an agreement, at least a verbal agreement, for a 5-year, $80 million deal with power forward Carlos Boozer. So they're not going to get shut out. They've got an inside scorer. And has to make him better. It's not the number one pick I would have wanted, but he has to make the Bulls better and make them tough inside. So, and supposedly that still leaves enough for one max free agent. So I don't know. I guess they're not out of the LeBron stakes yet. So we'll see what happens. Tomorrow night, LeBron announces where he's going. Today there was more cropping up. Oh, they think he's going to be with the Knicks or the Cavs or the Heat. You know, it's like, I don't know. Let's wait and see. How do they make an hour show out of that? What does he do?
It'll be a highly rated hour. You know, ESPN is kind of like backpedaling, like this was LeBron's idea. You know, they're just merely kind of accommodating him. But, you know, this is great programming. I don't know. I'm kind of with you that, you know, I don't know if you take the first half hour of it and review all the other free agents that are, you know, that have signed, or if you give LeBron the full hour, that'll be a little bit rough, and it might be really hard to take. Although I would like a nice up close and personal look at his posse, the guys that are making all these decisions, the guys in their late 20s, possibly early 30s, Maverick Carter, who's his, not his agent, but he's kind of his running the show. To me, he's the choreographer. I don't know exactly what else you'd call him, but it would be interesting to see the Team LeBron in action.
What's the latest smart money? What is there any like late, you know, feelings on what he's going to do? I was listening to the radio driving out to Iowa, and there's some people think that he's doesn't have the heart to leave his hometown. I don't know if that's, you know, that's on a roll or not.
I don't know what he's going to do, but what I think he should do is sign a 3-year deal with the Cavs, give him another shot to win there, and if he's really interested in maybe going with the Nets, then when they're in,
that's what I've heard. Yeah,
you know, he can look at it at that point. I'd like to see him stay. I'm usually not like this. I don't like LeBron that much, so I don't care if he's not on the Bulls, because I'd rather see the Bulls beat him. But for the town of Cleveland, he's just so important to them. I'd like to see him give him at least 3 more years. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like that.
Yeah.
There's a thought that he's not televising this show tomorrow night from Cleveland or Akron, and that's seen as a sign that he's not coming back there. But everything, there's so much crazy guesswork in trying to figure this out. Here's my question for you two. If the NBA had truly unrestricted free agency like Major League Baseball, and teams could merely buy him with the highest bid, as opposed to 5 teams all trotting out the same financial bids, how crazy would this get? If, you know, could he get double whatever the highest ever value had been? How far would some of these teams go if there was no salary cap?
I would think that the Russian owner of the Nets would give him about a half a billion over, you know, like 6 years. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I think it would be important enough to that guy to get established, the new thing in Brooklyn, to turn the team around. It wouldn't surprise me if he could get that much.
Well, which kind of free agency do you like better, the kind with the cap that's created this thing or Major League Baseball? And I guarantee if this was Major League Baseball and he had declared free agency on July 1, you know, we would be talking September 15th before there was any decision. It wouldn't be a week or 10 days. It would be at least a month or 6 weeks. So which way do you guys like better?
I don't like that a team can go down to one player on their roster. To me, there's got to be something done about that. But I don't know. From a just purely a fan standpoint, I like a cap. I think it just it gives more teams a shot. I don't know. What do you think, Dave?
I don't know. Has that worked in baseball, though, you know, as far as a balance? I mean, NFL seems to be the most, you know, fluid. And I don't know. Same teams seem to win every year in baseball for the most part.
Yeah, that's what
Tampa Bay. Yeah.
That, you know, if somebody like this New Jersey Nets guy could come in and get 3 huge stars every year, you know, whichever 3 he wants to pay for. And in the NBA, if you can, you know, look what the Celtics did when they got their big 3. I mean, you can fill in with good role-playing defenders and passers. And if you have 3 big-time guys who like to play together, it could be tough to beat.
Yeah.
What do you think overall, Phil?
You know, I think you wind up, you know, no matter what sport you're talking about, the thing you can't legislate against is bad management, and you can't penalize good teams with good management. And I think ultimately, that's still as important as how much money you throw at it. I think if you look at, look at the Yankees before they got Brian Cashman as the GM. That was a whole different thing. Kind of the Red Sox before they had Theo Epstein. They could still screw up the financial advantage. And I think that's probably true in other sports. You know, yes, the NFL has the salary cap, but, you know, has it made Cincinnati competitive? And, you know, you think you can still find your doormats still seem to find a way to stay your doormats. I don't know how to solve that.
That's true. That ringing cash register gives me a good clue on how to solve it. Let's get some more customers in here at T-Crown. Okay, for the Bucks in the Belfry segment this week, it's going to be a little bit different because what I'm doing is the drawing for the grand prize winner of this prize package I've been talking about for the last few weeks. We are giving away 12 bats from HoosierBat.com, a Pete Rose signed poster, which is a neat poster, Dave Hoekstra's book, a signed copy of it, and a 2010 Top Series 2 baseball hobby box. So the winner of that, and I will email or call, depending on what I have here for you, a number or an email, the winner is Steve Varicali. Okay. So that's, I think this was a question through Twitter, it looks like, or email. Well, I'll get in touch with Steve, and he can come up and pick the prize package up at T-Crown. We'll have to get the bats from Hoosier Bat. I'll call Dave Cook at HoosierBat.com. And we have the winner of the prize package, Steve Varicali. All right. Now, that was exciting, wasn't it, guys?
Boy.
Speaking of the Dave Hoekstra book, we got a minute here before the break. Dave, you want to give the details of your book party again? That's tomorrow night.
That is tomorrow night, and it's a great venue. It's a great venue. It's the Cliff Dwellers Club. I'm trying to remember my notes. It's up Michigan Avenue and Adams Street, I believe, right across from the Art Institute, but it is the hardcover version of the book, a little, you know, minor league baseball journal, you know, little anecdotes, all stuff I've done for the Kane County Cougars game program over the last, like, 17 years, you know, the best of type thing. There's a couple new essays in there and some updates, although Dontrell Willis is in the book, and we don't have the latest chapter in his life, which is I find extremely sad. He was such a we did little updates for some of the people that played through Kane County, and he was such just an engaging, just warm and distinct and clear memories of minor league ball at the low Class A level and stuff. And it's just – I just read how Arizona, you know, cut him and stuff. And so it's a little, like, you know – go ahead.
Sounds like he might be done, huh?
Yeah, well, I was reading in USA Today this morning. They say his agent says he's probably going to take the rest of the year off and stuff. But a guy who truly did play baseball for the joy and the love of the game, and to get that thing they call the it happening to him, you know, is just it's kind of sad. But he's in the book, and so the party, it's a short little shindig. It's like between 6 and 8 o'clock, and that's tomorrow night at the Cliff Dwellers Club. It's a private place, but we took it over for a night. And it's right over there across the street from the Art Institute on the 22nd floor. It's a little penthouse. So come on by.
One other thing before we go to the break, check out, and this kind of ties in with the Bucks in the Belfry, my T-Crown Tom eBay seller ID. I have a really neat group of items on there this week, including a little photo which has been signed by Satchel Paige, a Lou Gehrig jersey card, a Kobe Bryant autograph. You can a Ron Santo PSA 8 rookie card. You can get the links to that through tcrowntom.com or just go right to eBay. My seller ID is tcrowntom. And now after the, we'll have a short break and then we'll come back for Hoekstra Chicago. So hang in there, everybody.
The solid sound of wood hitting a leather ball. That's the way baseball started, and that's how Hoosier Bat Company believes the game should be played.
They've been providing bats to minor and major leaguers for 20 years. They offer ash bats, birch bats, and their patented Wood Force 2000, a bat with hickory in the sweet spot for great hits. View their products online at HoosierBat.com and see why players at every level have come to appreciate their quality and customer service. You can also visit them at 4511 Evans Avenue in Valparaiso, Indiana, or call 1-800-228-3787.
Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream is the place for great pizza and more. They use only the finest ingredients. That's why Rosati's mouth-watering menu can't be beat. Rosati's delivers for lunch daily. In Naperville, call 630-305-3500. In Carroll Stream, 630-653-9009. That's Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream.
Southside Cards and Collectibles is your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. No matter what your hobby, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, NASCAR, gaming, or more, Southside Cards carries all the new packs and boxes from Upper Deck, Topps, Panini, and Press Pass. You'll also find memorabilia and supplies. Come in today and see for yourself. Southside Cards is open every day but Monday. They're located at 11325 West 143rd Street, Orland Park, Illinois. Call 708-873-5088 or visit them online at southsidecards.com. Southside Cards and Collectibles, your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. Call 708-873-5088 or online at southsidecards.com.
Radio and the Internet.
TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
Okay, that's my pal Jimmy Reed. There's not a hot dog in his name, but there's a lot of celebrity hot dogs at Hot Dogs. Hot Dogs is probably my favorite hot dog place in Chicago, though it's hard to get into. I'm doing Hot Dogs as a little tribute to our guest today with his mustard. But it's like a designer hot dog joint. It's at 3324 North California, not far from, I believe, Gordon Tech High School. He started in the mid-2000s, if I remember right, around Roscoe Village, and he was kind of underground, and I think he had a fire that took him out, and then he moved over there on his North California address and just took off with, like, just some this game sausage. He'll have weekly game sausages of, like, rabbit and rattlesnake sausage and hot dogs, and he has theme ones like the Jennifer Garner Mighty Hot Dog, and I think there's a Polish sausage that's named after Elvis Presley. He's got duck fat fries. He kind of takes his name is Doug. He kind of takes a gourmet spin on his hot dog. It's like a little, you know, diner, very colorful, actually yellow mustard type colors and celebrity pictures all over the place. The only negative to say about it, it's really hard to get in there. It's like that old Yogi Berra saying, the place is so popular, I never go there anymore. And stuff. You know, I don't know his hours. I'm on the road, but I do know that driving up and down there, sometimes at 9:30, the line forms outside his place. This morning I was on Yelp looking at some of the comments, and there were some people who – he was on Anthony Bourdain. He was on one of those cable shows. He got featured on there. And so some people, I think, from Rockford or something drove in like 90 miles to have a hot dog at Hot Dogs. And he's kind of a sardonic owner. I've interviewed him a couple times, and he goes, 90 miles? He goes, that's nothing. I guess these people are kind of pissed off and stuff. But it's worth the wait. It's, you know, I'd call them and find out, you know, he might give you a hint of when a good time is to get in, or maybe, Phil, you're on your way back from Wrigley Field. You might want to stop in there. It's really, really one of the more unique, hot dog restaurants in America. And, he's got all kinds of good mustard there too. So it's Hot Dogs. It's at 3324 North California.
Where'd you see Ryan Sandberg today, Dave?
I'm out in Des Moines, you know, and I love small towns. I love minor league baseball. I don't know if you guys ever been to – I'm looking out my window now. Downtown Des Moines, there's just not a lot going on. We're doing a we're doing a travel story, like on Rhino's Iowa and stuff. And so he gave me some of the places he likes to go. We just talked about his minor league journey and – you know, it's interesting. It's fun. You know, I sat. They lost. I went through. They had a 2-7 inning doubleheader last night. I sat through both games. I thought one interesting thing. I didn't do a baseball story. I leave that up to the beat writers. But I did find it interesting that they were pitched Samardzija as a starter in the second game. I think that's his third start. He pitched pretty well. They played Albuquerque, gave up one hit, struck out eight. And I was just wondering, I didn't ask Sandberg this, but I was just wondering if they're grooming him to take the Z spot. You know, I don't know. But he looked, as far as what I saw last night, Samardzija looked pretty good and stuff. But, yeah, so I saw the I-Cubs.
Does he think anything about whether he has a chance to make it to the majors?
I didn't ask him. You know, I'm doing a travel. I don't want to step on the baseball writers thing. Although I heard that he's also, you know, looking at the Baltimore job. I mean, he's tight with McPhail and stuff. He just wants to go to the big leagues any way possible. I did ask him. We did talk about, and I'll have to look this up when I get back, about any other Hall of Famers that have made this journey. And he couldn't think. He told me Frank Robinson, you know, was managing the Winter League or something when he was still playing and stuff. But the more he sticks with it, I think the more compelling story it begins. And I, you know, when I was a kid in Naperville Central, I was kind of rebellious and kind of free spirited and stuff. But I really like these things I see these organizations do. And I don't know where you guys stand on this, but last night, I mean, they're all wearing their socks the same way. Their hats aren't crooked. I mean, I asked him about that. And I do believe organizations that are uniform like that, no pun intended. I know the Cardinals subscribe to that and stuff, and I really like it. Gets people to think collectively and as a team and stuff, and it was neat to see that last night. Not the cuffs down low and all that type of stuff. And I asked him about that, and he is kind of law and order. And just like he said in his Hall of Fame speech, you know, play the game the right way, play the game with respect. And he was good. He was good.
How's that Des Moines team doing?
Oh, it was funny. I mean, I brought my Cubness last night. I mean, they got one hit in the second game. You know, they offensively, I don't know. I mean, they got some, you know, they got Scales. They got this guy, Brad Snyder, who used to play with Cleveland. There doesn't seem to be a lot of offensive things for the future and stuff. But, you know, I think there's some pitching that could come into Chicago and stuff.
Is Vitters there? Do you know?
No, he's not there yet. They got this guy, I can't think of it. He's a Latin third baseman. I actually saw him play in Hawaii a couple years ago. Wellington Castillo is their catcher. Looked a little overweight to me. You know, I don't know. This
sounds like he has a future as a Cub.
Yeah, this Barney, their shortstop, he made the PCL Pacific Coast League All-Star team. Little scrappy guy, kind of like a shortstop version of Terrio. But I don't know where they, you know, I don't know what his window is and what they do with him with Castro at short. You know.
But speaking of prospects, Phil, are you going to be going to the Futures game? Is Phil still with us?
Phil? I catch it every year.
Okay. So you're going to go to it this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm heading out to Anaheim Saturday. The Futures game is Sunday. I guess I'm not going to see Daniel Hudson, who was on the roster for that game, because he's probably going to be starting on Sunday for your Chicago White Sox in that Jake Peavy spot. How big of an injury do you think Peavy could be for the White Sox, Tom?
Well, you know, he was pitching like an ace the last month or so. Part of that, I mean, they were facing a lot of National League teams, but he really was pitching better. He seemed to have a lot better movement and command. And so, I mean, that hurts unless Hudson can come in and just sail right through. I mean, if Hudson's going to come in and take his lumps as a lot of rookie pitchers do, that hurts a lot. Because the White Sox now, they're pretty much past the easy part of their schedule, which was June. And they've got a lot of tough games coming up, so that starting pitching, they're going to really have to come through for them if they're going to win that division. So that's not good. And from what I read, that detached lat muscle, I forget where I read this, but it sounded like that's going to be probably at least till September if he can even come back then. Did you hear anything about that as far as how long he might be gone, Phil?
No, that sounds like they've made the diagnosis worse than they had at the end of last night. You know, they were talking about it being like strained. I mean, if it is detached, yeah, that's a horse of a different color, and he could be out at, you know, again until September again. It'll make it a second straight kind of lost year to injury for him. Feel bad for, you know, any player that runs into some of that. Just goofing around time today on your morning, Phil. I was throwing around now, do the White Sox switch their focus in a possible trade from a hitter to the big kahuna on the market, Cliff Lee? Would you like to see him do that, bring in the difference-making pitcher?
I think what I would do is wait. I'd want to see how Hudson handles a couple of starts against a couple of big teams, because I really, if Hudson can be decent and, you know, like six innings, three runs type starts, I don't think they really need another starter as much as they probably could use a good lefty bat. But, I mean, you're never going to turn down a Cliff Lee if you can get him for a reasonable deal. But when you look at how much money they have in Peavy and Burley, adding Cliff Lee and putting all that into the starting rotation, I don't know. That I don't see that happening, but you never know.
What would Seattle want? What would they want for Cliff Lee? You have to.
They want major league ready type hitters, and the White Sox really don't have a lot of those kind of guys, unless, you know, maybe if Seattle liked Gordon Beckham, would you like to trade him, Tom? Because, you know, that's the caliber of guys they're looking for. You know, I think they would also want a young pitcher or two back in the trade. I think the White Sox could maybe do that. You know, if you added Lee, maybe you could trade him a Gavin Floyd, or even a Daniel Hudson, and then have, you know, but you really, you know, until you get Peavy back, then you're still going to be down a starter if you trade one of your pitchers. I'm just kind of goofing around with that idea, but, yeah. You know, he very well could wind up going to Minnesota. I think Minnesota is still the front runner to get him, and I see this deal wrapping up before we do the show next week. I think this is going to move fast now, so. You know, that would be one advantage of getting Lee from the White Sox standpoint is the Twins don't get him.
True. I don't see the Sox acting that fast on it, though. I think they probably would want to see Hudson first. But you're right. Maybe they think, okay, we need to get him. If the Twins get him, or if, I don't know, even the Tigers or whatever, the Tigers probably aren't in on him. But I just think that's a lot of money in your rotation, and I wouldn't want to give up Gavin Floyd because he's been pitching so well, and then you're still leaving a spot open. So I don't know. I don't think it would work out. I'd be very surprised if that happens. Hopefully a National League team will pick him up. Somebody like the Cardinals or who's in the National League that needs pitching? Somebody has to. Maybe the Braves could get him or something. I don't know. But I don't see the Sox getting them. I think the Sox want to get a lefty bat.
You know, I still think Prince Fielder is going to be available, even though the Brewers are not talking as if he is. I think they can't really afford to ruffle their fan base any sooner than they have to. But I bet on July 31st, Prince Fielder is in play.
Well, I would sure love to get him. You know, he's not doing so well this year, but his last couple years, he's quietly been one of the best power hitters in baseball. He's had some huge years.
Yeah, he's also picked it up a little bit lately too. He definitely had a April and May, but he's showing signs of getting back to the kind of run producer he is.
Wouldn't you think he'd love hitting in the cell?
Yeah, he should, especially summertime. He absolutely should. And the benefit to getting him is, you know, you're going to have him next year. You'll have to pay him a ton. You know, you'll have to pay him Konerko plus. But if you're not going to bring back Konerko, he fills your first base hole just as well as anybody could fill it. Buys you another year to figure out Vicieto. Hey, Tom, I was thinking last night about third base with the White Sox. How many different ways they have to go about that now? You know, I could come up with when Tehan comes back, you got Tehan, Vicieto. Some talk about putting Beckham back there. I like the kid that's a Triple-A now. Brett Morrell is going to be there.
Yeah, he's a good future guy.
you know, and you still have Vizquel, who's done a great job since he's been playing. It's funny, you seldom see a team that would have so many, options that, you know, you could argue different ways in favor of all of those guys, at least for 2011. It's going to be interesting to see how they shake that out.
I think the rest of this year, if they're in the running for the division and Vizquel's healthy and playing like he has been, playing the real good D and in the second spot, I think Ozzie really likes him there. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets most of the playing time there. And meanwhile, Vicieto looks like he's got a chance to be a very good hitter. I'm kind of impressed. The only thing I don't like about him is it looks like he won't walk at all. His on-base percentage probably won't be very good, but he looks like he's got a chance to really be a good hitter.
This is a cliche, but, you know, when you watch, it is true that it's different with some guys than others.
True.
The ball jump is bad.
Yeah.
So I spent the first time I saw Maglio Ordóñez, Julio Franco's a guy like that, where the ball just jumps off his bat.
It did.
And I think Potato is kind of similar.
Yeah, I agree with you. You'd have to get somebody really good in return if they're thinking of using him in a deal for a lefty bat, because I think he's got a pretty nice future there. I'm really impressed with him, actually, the way he attacks the ball when he's batting. He looks like he's got, and he's got an arm at third too, which was pretty surprising. I didn't think he'd have that good of an arm. So I don't know. And then you have seen that, is it Brent Morrell or Morrell?
And yeah.
So they've got one of those guys. They could probably trade something. Tian, I think, when he comes back, is just going to be a utility guy. I don't know what they were third baseman, because he's too stiff a defensive player at third. I don't like him there at all. I think we're coming up to the end of another show. We did our drawing today. The winner was Steve Varicali. I'd like to thank producer Dave Olson for another great job. And Phil and Dave, it's been a blast. We'll be talking to everybody soon, but thanks for the few weeks. It's been a good show. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.